and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the entire world that knows you can't spell Carlo Correa without Oracle Park.
Whoa. Open your third eye, people. We all should have seen this coming at the beginning of the offseason. It's good to see you, Jake Mintz, on this fine Thursday morning as we have a boatload of news to cover since we last talked.
Yeah, a raft load, a float load. I'm just naming things that go in McCovey Cove that you can catch baseballs on. Jordan Schusterman, you look absolutely beautiful this morning.
Oh, thanks,
which is,
man.
Which is good because I slept through my alarm.
Yes, you did, but it's okay. We're here. You know, yesterday when the Correa news dropped, we were like, should we hop on and do a sudden baseball bonus podcast based on baseball news? Not an emergency. No, we'll wait till early Thursday morning and then do one then, because guess what? We had so much to get to, and we were worried we would have another signing overnight of someone named Carlos. Thankfully not. So instead, we are going to talk on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, of course, about Carlos Correa to the San Francisco Giants. We're going to talk about Estery Ruiz to the Oakland A's and some of the other pieces of that blockbuster. And then there's a whole mess of other signings. We will get to some percentage of them later. Then we'll spin around the remaining scraps of the free agent market. But it still includes some very fun players. And then we're going to talk about Baseball Reference Wrapped, which was amazing. And Jake hasn't seen it yet, so we're going to reveal that to him. And then we have a heartfelt tribute at the very end of our podcast, which you will hear all about. But Jake, we must begin with Carlos Correa.
Now, when I think about Carlos Correa, mm-hmm. I think about the draft that he was taken. I think I've said this before on the show, but when I think about him, I imagine him at the draft. I believe it was, 2012. We were seniors in high school, right? Or going into our senior year. Mm-hmm. And there he was, this baby-faced teenager. And he brought that tiny little Puerto Rican flag, right? The one with the wooden stick, right? He brought it with him, got drafted by the Astros first overall.
In a jersey that he would never wear.
Exactly. Those are the two things that stand out. Like, he has been in our lives as a baseball person for so long that at the draft, he held up a black and red Astros jersey next to Bud Selig. Okay? That's how long it has been with Carlos Correa. Two baseball characters who operate completely distinct rooms in my brain, right? Bud Selig and Carlos Correa could not be further apart from one another. And yet there they were standing on a stage in Secaucus, New Jersey.
He has already been in our baseball consciousness for a decade, and he will be for at least a decade longer as he has signed a 13-year deal worth 350 smackaroos. Just kidding. Million smackaroos.
No, a smackaroo is a million.
Oh, okay. So then there you go. That's perfect. With the Giants. The Giants have, after their pursuit of a large salary in free agency, a superstar, their search has concluded with one Carlos Correa. And if, when you look at the terms, like, holy shit, 13 years. Okay, longest free agent deal ever. This is amazing. $350 million. This is a lot of millions of dollars. But also, when you know that they were going after Aaron Judge, who of course had a much more personal connection with the hometown stuff, relatively, with Judge strongly considering wanting to play for his hometown team, this is not necessarily that personal connection. At the same time, this is a nice fit for a team in desperate need of a star in the post-Buster Posey era, and someone who is 3 years younger and is a shortstop. And who is really awesome at baseball and who is a nerd like their president of baseball operations, Farhan Zaidi. So this is a really nice match. We could talk about how close this actually gets the Giants to postseason relevance in 2023, but this is a very nice fit that I like, and it's nice to see them close the deal. So let's focus on Giants and Correa. There's certainly other fallout here, but what else about this fit that are you thinking about? I know you just wrote a little bit about this for Fox, kind of looking at the other sides, the other fallout of this, but let's focus on the Giants and Correa here. Because this, on one hand, you could look at it and be like, oh, well, they just didn't get Judge, so now they get Correa. But this is not, to call him a consolation is, I think, a little overstated. I mean, this is one of the best players in baseball.
I think you can make an argument that you would rather have Correa over the next 8 years than Judge. Mm-hmm. I think that's totally legitimate. And if you look back over the last seven seasons, right, Correa, I believe, has produced more WAR. He's been worth 39.5 wins above replacement per Baseball Reference over his career compared to Judge, who was at 37, right? And, you know, that it's not one for one. And Correa, I believe, came up a little earlier than Judge, which is hilarious to think about because he's so much younger. But there is an argument that you'd rather have the shortstop, right? Especially when you take into account that Carlos Correa seems to have figured out the durability aspect of his game. Now, he got injured a lot for the first chunk of his career. Reports say that he recommitted himself to being ready to play 162. He played 148, pretty good for a shortstop in 2021. Only 136 this past year, but he was on the COVID list twice, I believe, and got hit on the hand. Freak injuries, not soft tissue. And so moving forward, I feel pretty good about him being on the field every day.
Yeah, I think the one concern is that it was back stuff early, which is the last thing you want to hear in terms of injuries. And some of those also included some freak injuries with the broken rib, whatever. But core and back is not the kind of stuff you want to be hearing in your early 20s. But in general, I agree with you. I think I'm a little bit more confident. And yeah, I think the way I think about it is that if they had gotten Judge, I would feel better about their postseason chances in 2023. But beyond that, you know, like in the 5-year window, if they're going to chase down the Padres and the Dodgers, Correa arguably just gives them a much safer, higher floor for that. And that is why this is a really nice match, let alone the contract where it's, you know, 4 more years for $10 million fewer dollars. Which is, you know, thinking that far into the future is goofy. We should really only be talking about those next 5 years, which is why I just made the point that I did. At the same time, I mean, this is one of the best players in baseball, and adding him is a great step and their best move remaining that they could have made.
So when I think about Correa in my head, right, he is associated with the idea of untapped potential. Mm-hmm. That he is yet to truly ascend to the player that he could be. That he has been phenomenal, 39 career WAR. But that there's something remaining for him to become. And I think that that is true in some respects. But at the same time, that overshadows what he has been. Carlos Correa has a 129 career OPS plus. Okay? He has a 836 career OPS. He has 155 career home runs as a shortstop. This guy is an outstanding baseball player already, okay? And I just think that the idea of what could he be undersells what he has already been.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting because you mentioned the untapped potential, and the peak statistically was undeniably 2017 when they were cheating and, you know, when he had a 941 OPS. Now, he was hurt some of that year, too. 2021, he comes close. You know, he finishes fifth in MVP. But honestly, if we're really zooming into a peak Carlos Correa, I think about the 2020 postseason. You know, he did not play well in the shortened regular season. But what he was doing in the playoffs, I believe he had 5 home runs during that 2020 postseason. 6 home runs during that 2020 postseason. And of course, they didn't even reach the World Series during that run. But his, I mean, that was like, holy shit, we can't get this guy out. This is when, of course, after the scandal has come out and he's like ultimate villain status. But to your point, I think that there is still a ceiling here that is, you know, one of the 10 best players in the world, whereas instead he's been consistently one of the 20 best players in the world.
There, we've seen him be a cheat code.
Yeah.
Right? Where there are very few players that we've seen do that. It was like Harper last year in the mm-hmm. postseason, right? Judge for all of 2022. But when you see, I think about like that month that Matt Kemp solved baseball. Do you remember that?
Yeah, no.
Josh Hamilton.
Some real heaters.
Right. We've seen Correa solve baseball for like 3 weeks. And I have confidence that he can do it again. Let's talk about the cheating scandal and then we'll move on to the fit with the Giants. Do you think the cheating scandal has any real impact or had any real impact over his market, over the final dollar figure, over teams that were not interested? Or is it being used as cover by teams who didn't want to drop $350 million?
I don't think this matters for anyone else. I think it's cover. The Dodgers is an interesting one. I do feel like it's certainly a part of the interesting spot for the Giants is because now the Giants fans can, I mean, talk about renewed sense of booing. I mean, this is going to be incredible stuff. The Giants actually don't go to Dodger Stadium until June because the balanced schedule now does not have divisional matchups happening quite as frequently. So we will have to wait quite a while to see that. At the same time, I think it was we're probably the 1 year removed. Again, so much about it with him was that he was the most defiant, the most saying like, you know, yes, I will play the heel. I will play the villain. I don't care what you think about us. But as we mentioned, you know, he wasn't on the team this past year when they got to go on and really prove it without him and really prove it without cheating. We think they've already proven it since then. But so that leaves him in a weird spot. But talent-wise, I think he's so good. I don't know. I think that it's more that he cost $350 million that priced a lot of teams out more than it was anything having to do with the cheating scandal. I think we're mostly past that, but I do think it'll help the Dodgers boo him even harder for the next 13 years.
I don't think it hampers him internally with the Giants at all.
No, not at all.
I think that there was a lot of anger, obviously, and there still is anger within the league about what the Astros did and how brash they were in handling it. But I do think there is a level of respect that Correa gained from baseball players in the weird, warped baseball player brain, professional athlete brain, because he stood up there and he took the heat, man. Like, he didn't have to do that. There was a path forward from the mistakes that they made, from the transgressions that they did, right? And I think the way that Correa handled it was the optimal way of handling it for the Houston Astros at the time, right? From the outside, taking their cheating and turning it into them being wronged somehow looked totally stupid and irrational. But internally, I think that played a decent role in their 2020 season where they turned a mediocre regular season into a great October. And yeah. I think that mattered. And I do think that there's a level of bizarre respect that Correa has warranted by the willingness he's shown to own up to his mistakes.
Yeah. And listen, I'm sure at the same time, he's still viewed by other players as like, right. No, he is cheater number one. Because the other ones, guys on the team, the Bregmans and Altuves, for them publicly in the wake of it was very much like, yeah, we screwed up. Sorry. Like, I'm sorry. This is not good. Like, I'm embarrassed. Blah,
but that's
blah, blah,
just because they're bad at public speaking. Honestly, well, like Correa is just a confident person.
Sure. Sure. But again, the fact that Correa was one to do it, and it's easier for people to be like, oh, you know, Bregman and Altuve, they feel bad. Correa's like, fuck off. But I agree. I agree that it did definitely, I think it did help them in 2020. So it all worked out. Anyway, the point is he's on the Giants now, and the Dodgers fans will be booing him like crazy. Like we know the Twins. Let's talk about the Twins here quickly. Twins reported final offer, 10-year, $285 million. Hell of an offer. Better, more than Xander Bogaerts got, and think about how much we were like, holy shit.
I want to talk about Bogaerts. That was exactly what I wanted to talk about. For a year, all we heard from Red Sox brass, from GM Chaim Bloom, was how important, how much of a priority Xander Bogaerts was. And I'm planning on writing about this today for Fox, is like, that's great. You can say every 5 minutes that he's important, he's a priority. But when push came to shove, their offer was bullshit. They gave a bad offer, right? It was an unserious offer that didn't match up with the idea of a priority. On the flip side, all winter, the Twins have been saying, Carlos Correa is our guy. We love him. We want to keep him around. And 10-285 is a serious, legitimate offer from the Minnesota Twins. And I don't want to give out a you tried prize, right? But I think when you compare it to the Red Sox, the Twins did legitimately make a push to keep Correa around, and the Giants just priced them out. And I think
by a
whole lot. And I don't think that's anything really to be ashamed of. So a little hat tip, second place prize for the Twins.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate. And Aaron Gleeman wrote a really good kind of recap of the situation on The Athletic. Of course, he's as plugged in with the Twins as anybody. And like, on one hand, you say, well, we're still talking about worrying about 10 years from now. And if it's that important for the Twins' success right now to keep Correa, then go to 13 years, go to 14 years, go to 15 years, make it happen. At the same time, I totally agree with you. I think 10-285 is a very real offer. But in this market, in this situation with Scott Boras and with Carlos Correa, it's not surprising that the Giants were able to get that done. So Twins sucks. I mean, I think that there are still moves for them to make, whether it's Swanson, whether it's Rodon. We'll deal with that, whether they do or do not make them.
That's the big thing, right? Is okay, so the Twins took 10,285, mm-hmm. or I guess what is it, AAV, like 28.5. Oh yeah, wow. Good quick maths. They took $28.5 million and they put it into a jar and they said, we're gonna spend this year. If they can take that 28.5 mil and they can distribute it around a number of other players to improve their team, I think they can be competitive in a bad division this upcoming season.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let's talk about how much this actually helps the Giants. And let's actually just combine, throw in the Stripling thing here into the conversation, just because how good are we feeling about the Giants' upgrades this season? It seems that they could still be doing more. At the same time, have they done enough now, adding Manaea, adding Stripling, adding Haniger, and now adding Correa, to where we can have a real conversation about them as a postseason team? Maybe not with Dodgers and Padres level, but maybe, right? I mean, there are versions of this team that look more talented than the team that won 100-plus games ago last year, right? But it still doesn't look as talented as the Padres or the Dodgers in some respects. So how are we feeling about the Giants in that level?
I have 2021 brain with this team. They came out last season and had more wins than anybody else, and the team wasn't that good. And whatever magic they whipped up, whether it was getting these guys healthy, whether it was, you know, Gabe Kapler having like a plus 10 wins effect, whether it was pure dumb luck, the 2021 Giants are drugging me into believing that the 2023 Giants can outperform what we think they are. Right? I'm willing to take a look at this team, the roster as currently set, and say, okay, well, that's probably like an 86-win team, but they're the Giants, so they'll win 93 games. Right? And maybe that's irrational, but they've shown that ability to insanely outperform, and I think they did it again last year, honestly. If you take a look at the injuries they had and the people they were playing and how awful their defense was, and
right, to still go 500.
To still go 500 is kind of like that team. Look at the names. It's not good. It wasn't a good team.
Yeah, and they won 82 games. I'm with you.
I just think you give this group some weapons. I think they could use one more bat, right? I think they could use one more reliable arm in the bullpen. But, dude, one of Manaea, Stripling, Alex Wood is just going to be an all-star. Like, yeah, that's just the way the Giants have operated, right? And Logan Webb, friend of the show, has been under the radar, one of the best pitchers in baseball for the last couple of years. Like, I don't... The things that the Padres and the Giants do well are so different right now, right? The Padres have this incredible upper crust of superstar. If one of those guys get hurt, the Giants can easily finish above them. No doubt in my mind.
I agree. There's more depth in the way of like competent players, but I am still pretty underwhelmed by this offense, especially if you have any level of jock regression or Haniger injuries, which are very possible. So I like what I'm looking at here, and I totally agree with you about the pitching. I have way more faith in the pitching to kind of maximize what they're working with, even if they are using random relievers like Junior Marte and John Brebbia and Sam Long. But they definitely need another hitter, and I think they could, right? There's still room to add here. I mean, their payroll now, even after giving Correa a lot of money, is up to 190. I mean, they're still not sniffing luxury tax. And if they really are committed to spending up and getting into that top of the NL West, then keep going, go sign Conforto, you know, whether it's Brantley, like there are other fixes here.
Mm-hmm. Brantley on this team is the perfect fit, man.
Yeah.
I mean, the one issue there is like him or Peterson in the outfield is like a tough look for a team that already has bad defense.
They don't have as much room for an obvious full-time DH, whereas Conforto, there's more upside as kind of a full-time outfielder. But he's such a mystery right now that it's hard to really tell. So I agree, though. I think they will. I think they will pursue that. There are some bats out there that can help this team because the lineup right now is still not super great. All right. That's the Giants. That's Carlos Correa. He will be there for a very long time, and we will surely be talking about him many more times in the coming 13 years.
Went pretty long there on Correa, Jordan. I think let's take a quick break. And after the break, we will talk about Sean Murphy and how weird that trade was. We'll break down Chris Bassett to the Jays. Stripling, we already talked about. Zunino is good to the Guardians and a bunch of other moves. After this.
Hi, this is Dave LaGreca from Busted Open, home of the best pro wrestling talk on the planet. Here two exclusive episodes every week on the Busted Open podcast. Friday afternoons, myself and Tommy Dreamer bring you The Legacy of the Territories, a special series looking at the history of what built pro wrestling in the U.S. Then Sunday morning, it's the Masters Class with Tommy Dreamer, Bully Ray, and Mark Henry. Download Busted Open right now on the SXM app, available with all of our trials and popular plans or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back on Baseball Barbacast. It's time to talk about the second biggest transaction that took place since we last spoke earlier this week. And Jake, I sit here on the Zoom wearing a Milwaukee Brewers. This is a Micro Brews hat. Shouts out to the Carolina Mudcats alternate minor league identity, we should say, their alter ego, the Micro Brews. And I'm wearing a Brewers hat to celebrate the Brewers somehow winning the Sean Murphy trade despite not getting Sean Murphy. We'll get to that in a second. But let's start with Sean Murphy, the real headliner here. Sean Murphy going from Oakland to Atlanta. William Contreras heading from Atlanta to Milwaukee. Bunch of prospects from Atlanta who we'll talk about in a second going to Oakland. And Estuary Ruiz going from Milwaukee to Oakland as part of the prospect haul for one Sean Murphy. Jake, when you first saw this deal, what did you think?
The whole thing was weird because of how it came out too, right? Friend of the show, Talking Jake from John Boy Media, was just tweeting teams out, being like, there's a trade with these teams. He was right. And the way that it trickled out was just so bizarre because we got like an additional player in the deal every like 5 minutes. And for a while, we were like, oh, the Brewers are involved. It must include Willy Adames. They're probably getting Sean Murphy. And then we saw that William Contreras was involved. It just got so confusing. And we were waiting for a good baseball player to go to the A's. And it never happened.
Hold on that. All right, let's go one team at a time here. Well, quickly to your point about how weird it was. I mean, the Braves have made a name for themselves as just dropping the news, you know, dropping the signing, dropping the trade with their iconic, you know, blue background, white text press release with a bunch of words. And it's just like, Braves announced we've acquired good player. And it's like, holy shit. Okay. Well, all right. Well, I guess they did that. You know, Anthopoulos moves in silence. In this case, it was the opposite of that. It was one player at a time. You know, there's nine players involved. So there was a lot to process. Three-team deals are rare, and so we had to kind of figure out who's going where, and sometimes it's like someone gets it wrong. It's like, actually, he's going to that team and whatnot. But as the dust settles, we have a very strange-looking trade from three different angles. But let's start with the simplest, which is that the Braves have acquired Sean Murphy. Coming into this offseason, we knew Sean Murphy was going to get traded. You could look around at many teams who were desolate at catcher, and you would say, wow, they could really use Sean Murphy because Sean Murphy's awesome. Instead, the team that had three competent catchers in Travis d'Arnaud, William Contreras, and Manny Pena are the team that ends up acquiring Sean Murphy. Now, how good is Sean Murphy? Because if the team with three catchers is still willing to go out and get Sean Murphy, that must mean he's pretty good. We've kind of debated this over the last couple of weeks if we've talked about Sean Murphy, and I've kind of settled on Sean Murphy being at best the fourth catcher in baseball and at worst like the seventh or eighth. The only catchers I can come up with that I would absolutely rather have, for not even just contract, absolutely rather have than Sean Murphy, no doubt, are JT Realmuto, duh, Adley Rutschman, duh, still Will Smith because he's that good of a hitter. Those are the only three I absolutely no doubt would rather have than him. Besides him, Wilson Contreras, of course, I think Alejandro Kirk offensively has a case. You could still say Salvador Perez, I think. And then Travis d'Arnaud, right, who is on the Braves. Who maybe get a little older, but he's also been a great player. So it is a short list of catchers you'd definitely rather have than Sean Murphy, but the Braves arguably already had one of them. So this is an interesting fit. Where are you on how good Sean Murphy actually is? Because I know most people haven't really been watching him recently with Oakland.
Well, that's what's funny is people don't know. Mm-hmm. if you're out there and you're like, John Murphy's this, you probably don't know because you're not watching the A's every day. And if you're not watching the A's every day, that's normal. That's healthy. That's okay. I would agree with you. I think I'd rather have Wilson Contreras just because of the offensive upside and the fact that he could develop defensively with the Cardinals. But yeah, I think he's definitely a top five hitter in baseball, but I wouldn't trust me. If you're listening to this, go listen to someone who watched Sean Murphy for the last 3 years.
That, and also catchers besides JT Realmuto, and who I believe will be Adley Rutschman and Will Smith, this is what makes them so amazing. I don't trust any of them.
They're like relievers.
If we were talking a year ago about this discussion, we'd be like, oh my God, he has Manny Grandal. Do you see what he just did? This Grandal guy is unbelievable. He's a great framer. He's like a 140 OPS plus. He's amazing. Oh, off a cliff. Okay. So I, you know, generally I don't trust many catchers at all, but because Sean Murphy's defensive upside is also so high, one of the best guys controlling the running game, also just calls, like he has an excellent defensive reputation on top of the power he's giving you for a catcher. I just think he's an awesome player. So he's top five catcher, and that's why it is worth pursuing. But still weird. Still weird for the Braves to be the team to get him over a team like Cleveland. But they did it. Okay, so the Braves, they get better, I think. But they did give up a good amount here to get him. Do you want to talk about the A's or the Brewers next?
Well, I want to talk about what the Braves are going to do. So I think that Travis d'Arnaud might be the single most underrated and underappreciated player in all of baseball. This guy is an offensive force still, despite being in his mid-30s, and he handles a Braves pitching staff that has been one of the best in baseball over the last handful of years. I mean, he is always prepared. He is always ready. He is someone who pitchers love throwing to, and I think he's a really vital part of this team. And what I think this trade does for the Braves is it allows them to wring and suck and sponge every bit of good Travis d'Arnaud out of Travis d'Arnaud. Because d'Arnaud has not caught 130 games a year. He usually catches around 100. But they can keep his legs fresh and keep his bat in the lineup by DHing him, by rotating him and Sean Murphy out. And d'Arnaud, who has an $8 million team option after this year that they will surely pick up unless he grandals, will be valuable next year with that $8 million if he's able to keep his legs fresh. And I think that this is not really a passing of the torch because Murphy is only has one extra year compared to d'Arnaud.
Yeah, it's 3 years. Yep, sure.
Unless they extend Murphy. But I do think this is a great fit, and I do think the two of them will have a very symbiotic relationship.
Keeping d'Arnaud off his legs, and when you don't have to, when you can then have Sean Murphy catching instead of William Contreras, that is a huge, huge, huge upgrade defensively, not to mention the offense that he's still providing. So I totally agree with you. And I think it is weird because they've been so quiet in free agency compared to their, Phillies and Mets. Maybe there's still a move in there for them. Shortstop is still something of a question. Left field, I think, is arguably even more of a question for them. So they probably still have some moves to make offensively. But I agree with you. I think how it will mesh with d'Arnaud is great. Let's talk about the Brewers here because they wiggled their way into this deal. We knew they were also after a catcher with Narvaez hitting free agency after a down season. They still have Caratini, but he's not someone you want playing every day. And so because of that, I was like, all right, well, are they going after Sean Murphy? Do they have the kind of the prospect capital to get Sean Murphy? Instead, they say, hey, Braves, actually, we'll take one of those extra catchers off of your hands. Sure, William Contreras doesn't have the best defensive reputation, but 5 years under contract for William Contreras, coming off an all-star season. And we've made bad catchers into better catchers very recently. So let's just give this a shot. This dude's what? He's 24, 25. Like, this is a no-brainer. And all we have to give up is Estuary Ruiz. Absolutely. And get a couple pitchers as well. Like, this is a total steal for them. Now, I'm going to put a tiny bit of cold water on this in a second, but I assume you generally agree that, like, this is an unbelievable wheeling and dealing for the Brewers. When all the moves that we've heard about coming into this, like, oh, the Brewers are going backwards. Oh, God, they might trade Adames. Oh, God, they might trade Burns. Oh, they're trading so-and-so because they don't want to pay Colton Wong, whatever. This is just an incredibly nifty move and an undeniable win.
The Brewers are very skilled. This front office is very skilled at giving themselves a chance to be good. Mm-hmm. Right. There are teams that are cheap that don't even do that. Right. And I think that that's what I like about the Brewers is if you look at this lineup, you're like, oh, Jesse Winker, you know, takes a nap and figures things out. Like he was one of the best hitters in baseball 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Contreras is a great hitter. Adames took a step forward. You could lie to yourself and think that Christian Yelich is going to figure things out. Right. And then the pitching is always good. Like this team could still definitely win the division, especially with the Cardinals being like kind of meh with their additions so far this offseason besides Wilson Contreras. Now, the one thing I'm going to throw cold water on, and I wonder if you have the same point.
Yeah.
I don't think that William Contreras wants to be there.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's not what I was going to say, but go ahead.
William Contreras, when he was traded, tweeted a bunch of broken heart emojis. Mm-hmm. Now, I respect that he was honest about that, and it's clear that he had a really good group of friends in Atlanta, and he had, in his mind, thought that he was going to be there for a while, right? But Anthopoulos will trade you, baby. He'll do it. There's no soul, no heart in that man, and that's why he's good at his job. And I'm sure he'll be fine, and I'm sure he'll adjust to this new group, but I'm a little skeptical where if the value here is the Brewers coaching staff teaching him how to be good defensively, right? And if he doesn't want to be there at the beginning, it could get a little rocky. Now, he's an adult. He's a professional. He'll adapt. He's there for 4 years, whatever. Just something to keep an eye on. Broken heart emoji when you're traded to a good team.
Sure. I agree with you. Not a team as good as the Braves. But, you know, I think it will balance out by the fact that the Brewers are saying, you're our dude. Like, we're trying to give you 550 plate appearances, which you were never going to get in Atlanta anytime soon. Whether they can teach him to catch or not, the one thing I will point out, which in the wake of thinking like, holy shit, this is the biggest, you know, swindle in baseball history, is that it's also possible we just saw the best 97 games of Wilson Contreras' offensive career. And I believe that they believe in the bat. But this was a prospect who was very well known because of his brother early on, and he had some good low minors numbers. He was falling out of prospect lists relatively. Like his offensive numbers, his offensive track record was nowhere near what he suddenly did in the big leagues this past year. And so I wanted to say, okay, well, he figured something out. And he raked and he had 20 homers in the big leagues in 97 games. But if the headline is, oh my God, they just traded for a 24-year-old all-star catcher with 5 years of control, that could end up being a little misleading. Like, would it be surprising if that was his only all-star game? Honestly, no, because catchers are so volatile. We don't know what catching presumably a lot will do to his offense, right? That's another thing that we've seen happen to catchers over time. So that's the thing. I am not penciling in an 860 OPS for William Contreras in 2023.
But even if it's 760, it's a win.
100%. That's why it doesn't matter. I'm just saying that I don't want to get too far ahead and be like, oh my God, they just got an 860 OPS catcher for 5 years. Like that I think might be a little aggressive. Still easy because what did they give up? Literally just Estery Ruiz. So let's
talk
about
that?
The A's.
Who's that, Jordan?
Who is Estery Ruiz? Well, the first note is that they just got him from the Padres in the Josh Hader trade, which on one hand makes you think, well, that's weird. They went out and acquired him in a huge trade for them. They must really like him. Why are they immediately flipping him that quickly?
Maybe they're negging him.
On the other hand, you could say, well, Estery Ruiz, he must be something special. Someone must think he's really good because he has put up very compelling numbers in the minors, the most important of which is 85 stolen bases. This is a guy with elite speed that will hopefully be taken advantage of here in the near future if stolen bases do become a more relevant part of our major league game. His power is something that is very highly debated because, yes, he hit 16 homers with 33 doubles and is technically slugged 526, but all the underlying data suggests this dude is not hitting the ball hard consistently at all and is more of a slash and dash type, I'm going to get my extra base hits because I'm crazy fast and not going to hit the ball over the fence. Now he goes to Oakland, not exactly a place that, until they're playing in Las Vegas, is going to be particularly a nice place to hit. And the fact that he was clearly the missing piece to go along with the rest of the prospect haul from Atlanta, which includes Kyle Muller, big left-hander who was good in AAA last year. Freddie Tarnock, same thing, big right-hander, decent stuff. Maybe he's a reliever, whatever. Roiber Salinas, who had crazy strikeout numbers, also crazy walk numbers in A-ball last year. Good stuff, but like not exactly a projectable pitcher. And then they got one. Did they get another prospect or was that it? I think that was it.
Tarnock is the guy.
Oh, and then Manny Pena, who gets right. Luke voided here, which is tough for him. So Muller and Ruiz are clearly the headliners here. But let's zoom out. Let's not even talk
about
this. Dude,
people like Tarnock.
People like Tarnock. So Tarnock is good. But let's zoom out because the A's rebuild, I guess they could still trade Laureano. But the A's rebuild is essentially done. They have traded all of their good players, okay, besides Laureano. They have traded 3 years of Sean Murphy, a year of Bassett, 2 years of Olsen, 2 years of Chapman, a year and a half of Montas, 2.5 years of Trevino, and a year of Minaya. And what do they have to show for it, Jake?
Bupkis, Jordan.
Who do they have that is like, this guy will be a really good Oakland A? I count like 2.5. Who do you
think? Yeah, I'm asking you, who are your 2.5?
Shea Langeliers.
Yes.
I think he's good. He'll be a good catcher. Great. But like the best version of him is maybe Sean Murphy, who you just had and still had 3 years up, right? Then you have a mess of pitchers, right? Muller, Ken Waldichuk looks like he's pretty good. Okay.
Cusack.
Cusick, who was not good when he came out of the trade. You know, Muller, okay, he's big league ready. The one that I am most interested in, who has been hurt, is coming back, is Gunnar Hoglund. I think he will be awesome. I think they got him for Chapman. That's the one I am buying in on. But a ton of pitchers, guys that have not performed well. Joey Essa has not been good. Adam Aller does not exactly look like a big league guy, right? And then you have Christian Pache, who by trading for Estuary Ruiz, you're basically already saying like, yeah, Pache is probably not our center fielder. And that was a year later, right? And I'm just looking at this haul and I'm just like, man, like this makes me feel so much better about some of these other rebuilds where you can at least point to a couple players in their system and be like, well, if that guy pops, I mean, listen, the Juan Soto trade is heartbreaking and still embarrassing on a lot of levels because you had a generational talent, but at least I can look at the Nats farm system and be like, well, damn, James Wood might be holy shit good. Oh, damn, you know, Elijah Green, who they just drafted because they sucked, you know, he might be really good. Like there, every other bad team, you could look at their farm system and be like, they might have a crazy holy shit guy, except Oakland. And that is really concerning for a team that already has such dire prospects as an organization and franchise moving forward. So that's where I'm at with Oakland. It's very sad.
I tweeted this, but I find it to be incredibly embarrassing. People dunk on A's fans all the time for not filling that cavernous Coliseum. But it's like, would you pay to watch this shitty team? Would you pay for this? I wouldn't pay for this. Like, I would much rather go to the movies. That's who they're competing against, right? You're not competing against them going to see another sports team. It's about other entertainment options. And if I'm an A's fan, I'm pocketing that $20. I'm not watching this shitty group. No, thank you. My front office isn't, and my ownership group isn't caring about investing in this team. Why should I? And especially now, with Vegas looming, that is an even bigger deal because in the past, the A's would do this, right? They would essentially compete and then purge and then compete and then purge. And every 3 years, they were able to build themselves back up. At no point did I ever think they would do it each time, right? It was like, man, they're going to be bad for a while.
So and then maybe it'll happen again. But it's, boy, it is harder than ever to look at what they have here strictly roster-wise, let alone what they're spending, and think that there's any hope, let alone in the division now that is, you know, building up in the way that it is.
Yeah, it's just a freaking bummer.
Yeah, it sucks. So sorry, A's fans. I hope Estuary Ruiz is miraculously amazing. Okay, let's just bounce around a couple other moves. I mean, listen, there was a lot that happened. So let's just do quick thoughts here.
Quick thoughts.
We already touched on Stripling to the Giants again. The same thing. It's literally identical contract to Minaya. Just, you know, a right-handed version upside. He certainly had a better season in 2022, but I think that's a great no-brainer fit.
So and the Giants have shown an ability to get the most out of kind of these mid pitchers.
Yes.
Right? They've done it with DeSclafani. They've done it with Alex Cobb.
Yep.
They sort of did it with Carlos Rodon. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, that's different. But, you know, Alex Wood, I mean, they've had a lot of success with those guys. So
Logan Webb, even?
Yeah, well, they easy fit. More impactfully is Chris Bassitt, one of the few remaining qualifying offer guys, going to the Blue Jays. Like this a lot. We just talked on Monday about how the Blue Jays finally did something with Kiermaier. Then they followed up with Bassitt, which puts their rotation in a pretty nice spot. They could probably still afford to add some more offense because Kiermaier isn't exactly going to replace Teoscar Hernandez offensively. At the same time, I think Bassitt is the kind of certainty that they really need, because that is exactly what you're paying for with Chris Bassitt. Is he will give you, you know, 30 starts and 170 innings. And when you look at the kind of pitching that they've gotten, which has been good, it's been talented, but also in sometimes, you know, fell off a cliff like Berríos, they need some certainty, and Bassitt is very much that. I thought that was a really nice move for them.
Yep, no-brainer fit. Really, really like that move.
Mike Zunino, my beloved Mike Z, who is still good despite coming off thoracic outlet surgery, which is terrifying, goes to the Guardians for $6 million. Love this fit too. This is basically just a like slightly worse defender, but also way higher upside hitter than Austin Hedges. Perfect. This is the perfect guy that you bring in. If you're not going to trade prospects for Murphy and you believe in Bo Naylor, this is perfect. This is absolutely perfect. He can hit it out of the infield, which they didn't have last year. Same thing with Josh Bell. I really like what Cleveland has done quietly this offseason.
He's going to run into 20 bombs at least, probably run into one in the postseason, and that's a lot more than an Austin Hedges was able to do.
Yes, he's right. Listen, he's going to strike out a shit ton for sure. That is the thing that will make it very different in this lineup. But that's okay. It's okay to have it. Yeah. There is a trade-off there. That is modern baseball. And Cleveland is finally realizing, maybe we can take a few more strikeouts.
So I'm going to peel the curtain back here. I was texting with Stephen Kwan, which sounds like a humble brag. I understand that, to try and get him on the podcast. And we're hopeful he'll be joining us at some point in January. And Stephen Kwan, Guardians outfielder, I said, that sounds great. Let's talk in January. By the way, congrats on Bell and Zunino. Those are two super well-respected good dudes. Yeah. And he responds, Zunino? Question mark. And I was like, yeah, you guys signed Mike Zunino about 4 hours ago. And it's just a great example of some players are not as plugged in on the day-to-day as we are.
They're not looking at TweetDeck 10 hours a day. That's weird. Stephen Kwan doesn't have better things to do? That's weird.
So in Stephen Kwan's mind, I was first.
Jake first. Yes, exactly. You're his number one source, even though the news had been out there for 4 hours. So I love that fit. And for me, who was terrified he was going to go to the Astros, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. I can super root for him. And maybe now being in Cleveland, not, you know, just a 4 hour drive for me here in Indiana, maybe I can and go ask Mike Zunino himself if he's good. So
wow.
Looking forward to that. Other biggest move that happened was late yesterday afternoon. Noah Syndergaard signing with the Dodgers. Sounds like he turned down a couple multi-year offers to take a 1 year, $13 million deal with the Dodgers. And I would do the same thing if I was Noah Syndergaard, because if I was a pitcher and I would like to have a good and cool ERA next season, I would sign with the Dodgers. So that is what he did. And I think that was a nice little move. Listen, we've talked a lot about how skeptical we are that Noah Syndergaard will ever come anywhere close to what he used to be, because his stuff is just nowhere close. But I think he can be a good pitcher. I've never said he couldn't be a good pitcher. And like I said, I feel way better about him doing it this year with the Dodgers than last year for $21 million with the Angels.
I don't think it's a binary, though. It's not like Noah Syndergaard stays throwing 94, 93, or gets back to 99. I think there's a legitimate world where he can get back to 96, 97.
Yeah.
Right? And that makes him a really good pitcher. And there's no better place to do that than the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And if I'm Noah Syndergaard, I'm pulling up to the facility like now, like literally right now. And I'm saying, Jesus, take the wheel.
Yeah.
Okay, Dodgers pitching development. You've
Connor
shown an
McGinnis,
ability.
Take the wheel.
Take the wheel, Connor McGinnis. I am your servant. Whatever you want me to do, I will do, because they have shown that ability to get the best out of pitchers. And I like this fit a whole lot. Jordan, does Noah Syndergaard start a postseason game in 2023?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I'm still going to say no, but I do like this a lot. And they really need this, because their rotation did not have... If Syndergaard did prove one thing this past year, is that he was pretty durable. And that's not something that a lot of the rest of this Dodgers rotation is proving right now. We know Kershaw's back, but I'm not Kershaw's back. We know that was talk about double entendre there. We know Kershaw's back, but we also know Kershaw's back is not great. And so I feel like having someone like Syndergaard, who will probably be able to take a turn every 5 or 6 days, is nice and comforting for Andrew Friedman.
I feel something in my bones, Jordan.
Oh, yeah. What is that? What is that?
It's a hot take. Woo!
Are you going to say he is going to start? Are you going to say he's going to start game one of a postseason game?
I'm smelling Noah Syndergaard all-star appearance in 2023.
Yeah.
I think what will happen is the Dodgers will either break him and he will be hurt, or he will be an all-star in 2023.
That's your binary for him. Yes, that's very funny.
Remember this moment.
Yeah, remember this moment. And then, you know, Ryan Yarbrough of the Royals, they're creating an Old Dominion super team with Vinny Pasquantino and their manager, Matt Quattraro. I don't know why they didn't sign Verlander. Very strange. Maybe they can trade for PJ Higgins. Michael Lorenzen to the Tigers. Tigers, sure. Michael Lorenzen, Matt Boyd. All right. Whatever. Sounds good. And then J.P. Feireisen to the Dodgers. Also,
Michael,
he's hurt. He's also hurt for next year. He'll be great in 2024, I'm sure. But
Michael,
we need to talk, yeah.
Michael Lorenzen's putting the mid and Midwest there with that move.
Feireisen will be awesome for the Dodgers in 2024 when he's back. And then the last one is Vince Velasquez to the Pirates. Jake, before we talk about the Pirates hype video, I want to ask you this, because everyone was dunking on the Pirates, tweeting a Vince Velasquez, we signed Vince Velasquez hype video. And I was like, listen, I agree. That's hilarious. But when I think Vince Velasquez, I do think of someone who also has had upside. Didn't remember when he struck out 16 guys against the Padres? I remember so vividly where I was for that game. I think it was in 2016 or 17. I was still in college. I remember that. Great stuff. It's never worked. And his career numbers are so much worse than what I feel like we still have assumed Vince Velasquez could be. It is honestly stunning. He has never posted an ERA under 4 at any point in the majors, despite being in the big league since 2015 with what looks like plus stuff. It is amazing.
It is amazing, and I am a sucker for it. I would have made the hype video too. Honestly, I am the world's number one Vince Velasquez believer. Even at age 31, there's something in the tank. The Pirates are just hoping that they can get 2.5 months of Vince Velasquez being incredible, and then they can trade him for Vaughn Grissom.
More prospect. Go. I encourage everyone to go watch his April 2016 complete game shutout, 16 strikeouts, no walks against the Padres. Quite literally one of the best games pitched of the last 10 years. It was Vince Velasquez.
Let's talk hype video. Here's the rule, okay? Here's what I will say about this. This could have been a graphic. You know, it could have been a meeting, or it could have been a phone call. It could have been an email. Didn't need to be a meeting. Okay. This could have been a graphic. No one dunks on a graphic, but it's the video. It's the video that people dunked on.
It's the music, dude.
It's
the music. And it's like, again, it's like, just show the highlights from 2016. You might as well at that point. Like, if you're going to hype it up, you might as well go back to when he actually did look like something that could be something of an awesome big league pitcher, as opposed to the 5 ERA he just posted with the White Sox.
I like the part in the video, the edit, where the jersey changes from the White Sox jersey to the Pirates jersey. Oh, man. That's pretty cool. And I don't want to dunk on teams for trying. And I like Vince Velasquez, but like, if you tweet our guy Vinny, okay, what percentage of Pirates fans does it need more context, right? Mm-hmm. Our guy Vinny, it's not even his name. No one calls him Vinny Velasquez. Like, that's what's confusing.
That was my other takeaway. I was like, wait, do people call him Vinny? Well, they will now. And if he's great for the Pirates this year, this will be an all-time, you know, they knew before us. So good luck. We'd love to see the Pirates have success. All right, Jake. Those are the moves. I'm sure there will be plenty more by the time we we post this pod. But now free agency, as we mentioned, is thinned out. I mean, listen, we're waiting on Rodon. We're waiting on Swanson. We're waiting on Eovaldi. Benintendi has had so few rumors. I don't know, man. I mean, I'm thinking about the teams that still haven't done that much. Certainly the Orioles. The Mariners have only spent on Trevor Gaunt. The Cubs, yes, they've signed Bellinger and Taillon, but boy, their fans are not happy. The White Sox, too. The Red Sox still have some moves in them. Where are your vibes left with free agency here? Is it going to slow down now, or are we just going to wrap up these big moves by the end of the week?
I think we'll have one big fish, either Swanson or Rodon, after Christmas. Is definitely a possibility at this point. I want to talk about the Tampa Bay Rays.
Oh, okay, sure.
And the Tampa Bay Rays' success is currently stunting the offseason of at least three teams, if not more. Cubs, the Red Sox, and I think the Orioles are all raising right now. And I think it will work for the Orioles because they are a small market team and they have taken the time to build an impressive player development factory. And that is the key. That is what the Red Sox and the Cubs are missing right now. The reason the Rays shtick has worked is because every year they're able to manufacture 2 to 3 legitimately good big league players, right? From nowhere. And the reason they've been able to do that, they've been able to do that is because they have built an impressive development apparatus and player acquisition apparatus over the last decade. It has taken them a decade to implement this.
Cleveland too, by the way.
The Cubs and the Red Sox have not done that. And I think this is most relevant with Chaim Bloom, right? Chaim Bloom came from the Rays to be the GM of the Red Sox and is trying to run the Red Sox like the Rays, but he's only been there 3 years and hasn't had the time to set up this player development system. And what that means is when a guy gets hurt and you're calling someone up, Tristan Cassis, who's a good player, is not ready to go right away because you're not the Rays anymore, right? You're not. And the Rays brain is keeping the Cubs and the Red Sox from spending money on good players right now, which is how the Cubs and the Red Sox become good. And in Chaim's case, I like Chaim, dude. He's a nice guy, and I think he's really smart. But I'm worried because if he keeps trying to run this team like he ran Tampa, I think he's very much on the hot seat. And I think you have to act quickly in these places. You don't have the time to fail.
And yet, when I look at the Red Sox roster, I still feel better about them somehow having a good season than the Cubs right now. Yes, they're in a much harder division, but the Red Sox still do have some star-level players on their team that the Cubs simply do not right now. There is not someone on the Cubs right now where I'm like, I mean, sure, you could say Bellinger if we're really going Hail Mary, but there's not guys on the Cubs roster right now, like if we go back to the Rays, like Wander Franco or Shane McClanahan, who can be one of the, or even Brandon Lau, who can be one of the best players at their position. They don't have that right now. And I love Ian Happ, and I love Nico Horner. Like, these are good, solid players. But to be a difference maker, to have a Rafi Devers, who of course was there since long before Bloom was there, like, those are the players that make differences, and those are the players you generally have to pay for if you are not going to sign and develop them the way that Cleveland has with Jose Ramirez and developed like Shane Bieber and the way Tampa has with McClanahan and Franco and Lau. And the Cubs haven't done that yet. Maybe they will someday, but they're not there right now, and that's why fans don't want to hear Jed Hoyer point to the Rays and be like, well, the Rays don't have stars. We can still win this way. It's like, no, dude, you're the Cubs. You have so much money. Spend it. Go try and get the good players because you can do that and the Rays can't.
These two teams have followed the same path in a very interesting way. Losers forever, 21st century hits, they break their curses, and then they spend that money to develop the area around their ballpark into a money-making machine. And what that means is that winning baseball games means less to the financial bottom line of the Red Sox and the Cubs more than maybe any other team in the league, right? I would say the Cubs are number one because fans, shouts out to Cubs fans, they show when the team is shit. They've showed when the team is shit for years, and they'll continue to show when the team is shit. And Wrigleyville and that whole area that they've developed is going to be a cash cow, and the Red Sox are almost done with their version of it too around Fenway. And that's cool for fans, but at the same time, it's like, does the winning matter as much? And we've seen ownership's reluctance to spend. And this is what is related, right? Like, if Jed Hoyer could choose how to run the Cubs, he would not run it like the Rays, okay? He would run it like the Padres or the Dodgers, everyone, or the Mets. That's what the GMs want. But the GMs that get hired to run the teams trying to save money are hired because the ownership group thinks they can run it like the Rays. Chaim Bloom would love to spend money. Look at what happened to Andrew Friedman. He was running the Rays and he went to LA and then he just started spending all the money, right? But ownership groups like the Cubs and the Red Sox don't want to spend the money. And so they hire guys who they think can run it like the Rays. And it's just incredibly disappointing. Really disappointing.
I agree. So Cubs, we'll see if they can get Swanson. Or,
I also think the Red Sox, I know they overperform randomly from year to year. I take a look at this roster and I'm incredibly underwhelmed. Okay, just to quickly go through it. Every single person I've talked to about Yoshida thinks it was an incredible overpay, which is a bummer because he seems like a really fun player, but he's not going to hit more than 8 home runs. Verdugo and Devers.
I'll slam the over on 8 homers, but that's fine. It could be an overpay and he could still be good.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that.
Verdugo and Devers are both good. Devers is a star. Verdugo is solid. Trevor Story had the second largest K rate jump in baseball last year. Already.
He was hurt the whole year.
I don't think he's that bad either.
Going to be pretty good.
I think he's fine. Eric Hosmer is not good.
they have more. They need to do more too, to be clear.
Eric Hosmer is not good. Tristan Casas could be good, but he might not be. Kike Hernandez was one of the worst players in baseball last year. Granted, he was hurt. Yep. He's not as good as he was in 21. He's not as bad as he was last year. Reese McGuire got hot and is fine. Christian Arroyo is not a guy. Bobby Dalbec strikes out all the time. Their rotation, Chris Sale, if he's good, will be Chris Sale. And if he's not, he won't. I really like Garrett Whitlock. I think he's pretty good. Nick Pivetta is incredibly mid. Brian Bello has barely pitched in the big leagues. And I don't believe in James Paxton. This team is going to win 78 games. Sorry. Right. As it's currently constructed, I'd hammer the under.
More than 78 games?
No, but the Cubs are the Cubs were not in the ALCS 2 years ago.
I was just comparing. No, I agree. I agree with that. I think that's very possible, but
yeah,
we'll see. Neither of their off seasons are over, so we'll see what happens.
Jordan, let's take a quick final break, and when we get back, we will have a little bit of fun. We will stop yelling about the Red Sox. Sorry, I got on my soapbox there. But hey, you know why they call it a soapbox, Jordan?
Why do they call it a soapbox?
Because when you get off of it, you feel clean. We'll be back to joke around and banter about a lot of stupid shit after the break.
Negro Leagues Baseball Museum President Bob Kendrick hosts the SiriusXM original podcast, Black Diamonds.
The Negro Leagues didn't care what color you were, and they didn't care what gender you were. Can you play?
Hear stories of the leagues and legends that shaped sport, culture, and society.
That's why the museum is so important. It's like, we are never going to forget you.
Episodes of the award-winning Black Diamonds are now available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're not talking about balls and strikes. We're talking about your life.
And we're back here on Baseball Barbacast to wrap up. And maybe I'm biased, but I think this has been a really great, delightful show. I think this has been a really good version of Baseball Barbacast. And Jordan, before we get out of here, let's talk about the holidays. So, Jordan, how do you consume your music? Are you a Spotify or Apple Music guy?
I am Spotify through and through.
Yep. Okay. I'm an Apple Music guy. I always have been, which was a little difficult when we worked for a Spotify, whatever. Anyway, there's Spotify Wrapped. I'm sure people know it dominates social media at the beginning of the December about the music that people listen to. I don't post mine because I have Apple Music and I fall asleep to the same album every night. And so my Wrapped is just not interesting at all. And you don't like music. And so yours is not interesting either. But what is interesting is that Baseball Reference does its own version of Spotify Wrapped by state, the most searched player by state on baseballreference.com. I have not looked at this yet, and you're going to reveal it to me.
So it's a four-part thing. I believe they've done this in the past, but I don't remember it being this detailed. So we have four categories, okay, Jake? We have the most player page views by state. We have the most viewed team pages by state. We have this is my favorite one, the most viewed player pages on a single day. So you're matching a player to a day. And then we have the top 10 player page views of the season. So 10 players that have been viewed by the most. So the map, which I think was going around the most on Twitter, is what I just said, right? The most player page views by state. Now, I'm just going to tell you, it's possible you already saw some of the fun ones here, but I'm more interested in the other three. So let's get this one out of the way. The main thing to know is that 40 of the 50 states were either Aaron Judge or Albert Pujols. Okay, so I'm just moving to the side. 40 of the 50 states, Pujols, I think even more than Judge, were Albert Pujols or Aaron Judge.
So good for him.
10 states where the player page with the most views was not Albert Pujols or Aaron Judge.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to go through them and see if you can guess them. I'm going to do the easy ones first, okay? Does that sound good?
Sounds great to me.
You can guess the player. I'm not going to give you too much time. We're going to move through these pretty quickly because I think the other ones are even more fun. Michigan,
Miguel Cabrera.
Miguel Cabrera, correct. Wisconsin.
Christian Yelich,
good. Alabama.
It's probably a Brave.
Yep.
It's probably a Brave who was notable this year. I'll say Dansby or Matt Olson.
Matt Olson. There you go. Okay, so those are really the easy ones. Then we get into the fun ones. Let's go to Wyoming.
Brandon Nimmo.
Wyoming. I'll tell you. The Wyoming is not an active player.
Babe Ruth?
Nope. But
Barry Bonds.
Barry Bonds. All right. So Barry Bonds, that was Barry Bonds. I was apparently in Wyoming a lot more than I thought this past year. So Barry Bonds, that's the only Barry Bonds one, though. Okay.
I didn't know that Grant Brisby lived in Wyoming.
Colorado. How about Colorado?
I'll say.
Also a even older former player. So this is weird. A weird one. A Hall of Famer, one of the best hitters ever. You're not
Mike
guess
Schmidt.
This. No, a little bit earlier than that.
Lou Gehrig.
No, a little bit later than that.
Ted Williams.
No, Stan Musial. Stan Musial in Colorado. So no Rockies breaking through in Colorado. Alaska, another former great player along, if not Mike Schmidt.
It Kurt is. Schilling.
No, thankfully. George Brett. For some reason, Alaska.
Alaska just loves pooping themselves, I guess.
Yes. And then New Mexico, we have a one of the best players in baseball.
Alex Bregman.
It's not Alex Bregman. best hitters in baseball. He just changed teams. He cried a lot about it.
Freddie Freeman.
New Mexico loves Freddie Freeman. Okay, great. So now we get into the fun ones. Okay, those are all the boring ones. And I'm just going to tell you these because there's no way you're going to guess. The two ones that have caught the most attention are Delaware.
Paul Goldschmidt.
Pete Browning. Do you know who Pete Browning is?
I have never heard those two words together. Pete Browning?
Pete Browning, who won three batting titles in the 1880s for the Louisville Colonels, was number one for Delaware. All this tells me, don't look it up, because early indications suggest we should definitely be doing a dead ball Mad Libs for Pete Browning. So
Just save that.
So that's the weird one. And then for Hawaii, it was a Seattle Mariner.
Oh, Colton Wong.
It is not Colton Wong because he was not on the team yet. It is Dylan Moore. Dylan Moore. Somehow, I still have not figured that one out. But my favorite one, even above Dylan Moore and Pete Browning, is South Dakota. A Minnesota Twin in South Dakota, 2022. Minnesota Twin. Who you got?
Gary Sanchez?
No, but great guess.
Gio.
Gio Urshela. Gio Urshela, who was quietly very good for them. He was a totally good player. He was way better than Josh Donaldson.
Jordan, so. Pop quiz.
Yep.
Is Mount Rushmore in North or South Dakota?
It is in North Dakota, I believe.
I don't know.
Oh, okay. It is in South Dakota. I apologize. Gio Urshela and all of South Dakotans. That was tough. Why did I not know that? I think I totally like overthought that. All right, let's move on to the next map. The next one isn't that interesting. I'm just going to send you this one.
I have it up. I opened it.
The most viewed team pages by state. Is anything interesting here? I think the Padres dominating Montana is a little interesting. That's a little disappointing for the Mariners there.
Sorry, let me just do a quick read here. Okay, here's what's interesting to me. Maine having the Phillies tells me that they just love postseason baseball. The A's dominating, what state is it? Rhode Island? Yeah. That makes no sense to me.
Yes, Rhode Island.
The Reds dominating Delaware? Did Pete Browning play for the Reds?
I don't know. He played for, I guess he did play for the Reds. Yeah, in 1892. So maybe
maybe that's it. And then the A's dominating, like the A's having three states on here is very bizarre.
I love Cleveland in Nebraska. That one makes me laugh.
Okay.
But yeah, so there's a good one. Okay, so then the last two ones I do want to quiz you on because I think these are the most fun. Okay, so this is most viewed player pages on a single day. All right. So you're matching a player with a single day. The first one is a milestone and the other two are trades. The other two are actually both just on the trade deadline, but you need to guess who the players are. Okay, so the first one is a milestone.
It's a layup. It's either Miggy 3000 or Pujols 700.
Pujols 700, correct. So that's number one, September 24th. Pujols, most page views on a single day, September 24th, 700th home run. Okay, number two. This is a trade. Number two is someone that was traded at the deadline. Both of these are August 2nd. So who are two players that were traded that got clicked on the most?
Soto.
Nope.
Okay. That's my best guess.
But
was it someone in the Soto trade?
It someone in the Soto trade?
There's no way it was Luke Voit?
Oh, another interesting guess. No. But if it wasn't Luke Voit,
was it Eric Hosmer?
Eric Hosmer.
What?
Number two, Eric Hosmer, which is so funny. Oh my God. That's because it's like all of Boston being like, is this guy really that bad? Like, what's the deal here? Yes. Okay. And then the third one you should be able to get.
Trade deadline.
Trade deadline. A lot of fans. And this is another one of like, wow.
Joey Gallo to the Dodgers?
No, but interesting. Good. It's a good, solid thinking. This one ages great, honestly. And it will be much more relevant for his team than Eric Hosmer will be in 2023.
Position player or pitcher?
Position player. Position player.
Was it a big deal?
It turned out to be a big deal. This is not a minor thing. But it was the circumstances of the trade were the timing of the trade was notable for sure. Because that player could not walk. And that player is Harrison Bader. Harrison Bader, number three. So there you go.
That's great.
All right. And then finally, the top 10 player page views of 2022. So this is, this is easy. You could rattle these off. So you want to, we have one former player and we have, I guess Albert Pujols counts as a former player now. So Pujols, all right. So you want to just rattle off the top 10?
Pujols, Judge, Ohtani.
Yep.
I'll do Verlander.
Yep. Verlander ninth.
Mm-hmm. No one cares about Goldschmidt, so he's not on there. I'll do who got traded? Soto got traded.
Soto number five. Yep.
People love Bonds. I'll do Bonds.
Yep. Bonds number six. Only former player.
I'll do Trout.
Yep. Trout number four. You need two more. One of them you've already named.
Who?
Miguel Cabrera.
Miguel Cabrera.
Seven. Who I'm sure you spent a lot of time is
Bryce Adley Harper. Rutschman.
And then number 10 is another one you've already, not Adley Rutschman, and another one you've already named. But this one surprises me. And that is Joey Gallo, number 10. So it seems
so funny. That's just mad Yankees fans, dude.
And then Dodgers fans, right? So Joey Gallo, number 10, most viewed player page behind possibly 9 Hall of Famers.
Incredible.
Judge will be interesting. You know,
I would love
might never my, make it.
I would love to have this personalized for me.
Oh my God.
Like my Sean IP Foreman. Address. Or like Sean our Foreman. Like the account. Like my baseball reference account. Ooh.
Sean Foreman, we should legitimately ask Sean about this. All right. This pod has gone quite long, but we have one final thing we have to mention. We have to do it. Do we have to do it? I think we do have to do it.
We have to do it to him.
We wanted to a heartfelt tribute because a tweet, the first tweet I saw this morning was last night when I went over my computer and I have my Twitter list of teams, team accounts, and the Colorado Rockies tweeted something last night. The Rockies are saddened to hear of the passing of Petey the Donkey, a regular visitor at Coors Field. Sending our love to Sea Lazy U Ranch, which appears to be a dude ranch in Colorado. And this just got me thinking about a lot of things. First of all, rest in peace, Petey the Donkey, because clearly Petey the Donkey was loved. So we salute. This is not meant to make fun of the passing of a donkey. However, the tweet alone, does prompt many questions about Petey the Donkey's role in Rockies franchise history. And so I just wanted to do a little digging here on Petey the Donkey and give a real heartfelt salute here, because I have so many questions and now I just want to know everything about Petey the Donkey. So
you want to just go back and forth with questions?
Sure. Sure.
So this says the Rockies are saddened. I want to focus on these two words here, the Rockies. Mm-hmm. How many current Rockies know about Petey the Donkey? Players.
Right.
Blackman?
Yes. Blackman 100% knows about Petey the Donkey, because doing some research on Petey this morning, the main things that I've learned is that Petey has been coming to Coors Field since at the earliest 2011.
Okay.
All right. So Petey, I don't know the most recent time Petey was at Coors Field.
Well, he's been sick.
I assume he's been kind of going through Petey the Donkey.
Did they have like a George H.W. Bush moment where they like brought Petey out?
Petey, that's the thing. Petey made it this season. Petey was 30, which apparently is in line with donkey lifespan.
Is that ass years or?
No, that's real ass years. not ass years. And so, yeah, like that's pretty good. I think that's a pretty good run, right? For Petey. But I'm going back. Like if you Twitter search Petey the Donkey, I see Rockies beat writer Thomas Harding with a picture of him in 2014. I see him again. This picture with Carlos Gonzalez is apparently from 2015. He actually does seem like he was a pretty big deal.
How regular of a visitor do you think? Like how many games a year was Petey the Donkey coming out?
This was my next biggest question. And it does seem like that this ranch is you know, Rocky's sponsor, which makes sense. My question is, right, regular visitor, because if you were talking about a person as a regular visitor, how often would that be? Like, does that mean season ticket holder?
It depends how famous you are. So I would say like Larry point. King, RIP to another donkey legend. Like Larry King was probably there like once a month at Dodger Stadium, right?
Yeah.
And that I would say he's regular visitor. But I would say for an average fan who's not famous, it's once a homestand.
Once a homestand. But the visitor too is a funny way to phrase any.
You know who's a regular visitor at Coors Field is Fernando Tatis Jr.
right. Because he's going a couple times a year. Also, how often did Petey stay for the game is another question I have. Right, because
how many final outs did Petey the Donkey witness?
Presumably Petey was there. Clearly a lot of pregame ceremonies, celebrations. But you can't bring Petey up to the owner's suite. I mean, maybe you can.
Maybe they did like a petting thing on the concourse?
Oh, like during the game. That is probably the most likely version of Petey staying for the whole game. So that's a good one. But yeah, I think this is a great tweet from Nick Roque, who we just spent some time in San Diego. It's from April 2015. Carlos Gonzalez just had his photo taken with Petey the Donkey. The ass belongs to a Rockies sponsor. They wanted to bring their donkey to the game.
I really love like the sponsor emailing the Rockies and being like, can we bring the donkey? And they're like, yeah,
of course. I mean, this is much more fitting and appropriate in Colorado. I remember when Todd Helton played his final game, they gave him a horse. They just gave him a horse on the field before the game. You know, they have retirement gifts.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's got a ranch. I'm sure Todd Helton is saddened today over the passing of Petey the Donkey. So yeah, man. I mean, I would love to hear. Like, honestly, I would love to hear from some Rockies fans.
Does this matter to you?
Does this matter to you? Did you know, like, how clearly did you know, like, oh, God, like, Petey the Donkey, whether you were truly emotionally impacted or not? Like, I want to know how big of a deal this was, because I learned about Petey the Donkey for the first time this morning, and I want to know how far behind I am. That is why we are bringing this up on the podcast.
I didn't even know he was sick.
Was he sick? I don't know. Maybe he just reached the end of his donkey life, and that's okay.
You know when the Cubs won the World Series? Mm-hmm. And it was, there were these stories about like grandparents who'd passed away like 3 years before they won. If the Rockies win it in 2023 and Petey the Donkey just missed out, I mean, we're going to win it for Petey. Can we get like a Petey the Donkey like black outline patch that goes on the uniform?
My last thought is I appreciate everyone making little Sebastian jokes in the replies. All right. Thank you all for listening.
Bye. Bye, Petey the Donkey.
Thank you all for listening to Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to Chris Tyler for editing this monster of an episode. Hopefully there's not too much other news that breaks between now and Monday's episode, but we are excited to be bringing more podcasts to you still twice a week throughout this off season. This has been a ton of fun. And yeah, this was a good pod. I agree with you. I think this was good. This was a first post SBF arrest podcast. So that's really exciting.
Who?
Never mind.
Oh, yeah, we got ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
But yeah, I think this was a good pod. We hope you enjoyed it. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com, barbcast@gmail.com.
Please email us. I'm so lonely.
Yes. We've been getting some good emails. We read the long pod, so we didn't include any this time. Next week, much more likely. So send us your emails, send us your thoughts, send us your feelings, send us your Petey the Donkey condolences. And we will talk to you next Monday.
Sam Bankman-Fried, not a friend of the show, for the record.
SiriusXM Podcasts.